Hello, and welcome to episode 6 of Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life. I am definitely Marcus Freestone. This episode is about nihilism and negativity in general. Nihilism can take many forms, but in general, it's the view that life and all human values and institutions, even reality itself, are meaningless. It rejects any idea of purpose, planning, or destiny for either ourselves or the universe. This view is most commonly ascribed to existentialists, especially Nietzsche. As I explained in episode 4 and in the book, I'm not a nihilist. Rather, I believe that we create our own subjective meaning by exercising our free will. I'll begin by giving a brief historical background to nihilism before outlining the fallacies and dangers within and how to overcome them. Nietzsche's re-evaluation of all values was an attempt to strip away all illusions and falsehoods concerning our moral and empirical truths. He was questioning our long-held assumptions about ourselves and the nature of external reality, and also the provenance of human morality, i.e., are we making conscious moral decisions ourselves using free will, or blindly accepting moral diktats regardless of their suitability? While many of these questions had been asked for centuries beforehand, and have continued to be asked since, especially by the 20th century existentialists, Nietzsche was unique in setting himself the task of not only questioning all aspects of human thought, but actually devising a replacement system for all that he found wanting. It was ultimately his failure to complete this almost certainly impossible task that led, along with syphilis and a general disillusion with life, to his eventual insanity and death. Nietzsche is usually seen as an entirely negative figure, but surely attempting to establish and codify the nature of truth, reality, and moral certainty can only be a positive and progressive thing. Just because he ultimately failed to complete the task doesn't mean it wasn't a worthwhile endeavour. Nonetheless, the very attempt to show that meaning is subjective and variable rather than objective and fixed has come to be called nihilism and is now almost universally derided. Descartes was never called a nihilist for questioning the link between perception and reality, but in many ways his aims were the same as Nietzsche's. As I state in the book, I believe that meaning, good, evil, etc., are all words invented by human beings to describe personal, subjective experiences. There is simply, empirically speaking, no method of assessing external reality that is not filtered and translated, i.e. changed and distorted, by the medium of human consciousness. Therefore, how can we not participate in the wider philosophical inquiry of questioning these invented systems of categorization that purport to be empirical and objective? This is not an attempt to deny or undermine any individual view or belief system, but rather to establish, as far as possible, the true nature of reality. What is nihilistic about that? However, during the 20th century, nihilism has transformed into a less philosophical and highly dangerous notion, and it's largely that I wish to deal with in this episode. The stance is now taken by some people, including artists, writers, and musicians, that life is inherently meaningless, and therefore that all values are redundant. This is not what Nietzsche was proposing, and, as I hope I've made clear, not at all my belief or the idea behind these podcasts. This postmodern take on nihilism can be very harmful when it inculcates the belief that no values are even possible, or that life per se is not worth living. It has also encouraged, I believe, the idea among many religious people that their moral code is the only possible set of values, and that by extension all other values are immoral. Nihilism leads to a world of moral black and white and fierce certainties, and sometimes to people who are prepared to carry out atrocities in the name of their so-called values. It is also an assumption held by many that those of us who do not subscribe to some form of communal system of morals have no moral sense whatsoever, or are actively immoral or evil. The idea of assessing your own life and experiences and making your own moral decisions is seen by some as indicating possession by Satan. Part of this is down to psychological and evolutionary factors, which makes us hostile and suspicious towards anyone outside our tribe. But it is also in part due to the interfaith bias that my God is the correct one, all others are false, which is taught by just about all religions. I once saw a documentary where a Muslim fundamentalist declared, "We know that atheists fornicate in the street." His clear belief was that anyone not signed up to his particular club was barely a human being. Without his moral system, in inverted commas, everyone naturally behaves like an animal. Nihilism can also lead to anarchy, where any form of value is derided automatically. Living in a society with no values would not liberate us from the chains of capitalism. It would quickly dissolve into a living hell with no food, healthcare, rubbish collection, etc. The splinters of nihilism have also encouraged the idea of dropping out or opting out of many of society's conventions. But if you opt out of something, then you must logically be opting in to something else, even if it's living in a tent in the woods, living on nuts and berries and rainwater. I believe that a form of nihilism is also behind a modern trend of cynicism, the notion that it is somehow stupid or weak-minded to be actually interested in or passionate about anything whatsoever. The rise of the so-called geek or nerd culture is a vivid testament to this. It often seems to me now that you have to be either a nerd or a nihilist, and all middle ground has been lost somehow. There are many media figures who base their entire career on just being cynical about other things. They are creating nothing and contributing nothing to human discourse. They are merely leeches feeding on the work and enthusiasms of others. All this contributes to a general air of negativity. How many people have killed themselves in the belief that life is meaningless and valueless, or that all current meaning and value has been negated? Even if it doesn't push people as far as suicide, I believe that this neo-nihilism can still discourage people from seeking out positive aspects of life to enjoy, or cause great dissatisfaction with the lives they currently have. So much of our conversation is now inherently negative. Isn't this weather awful? Have you seen the price of X? Did you hear what happened to so-and-so? Why do I even bother? Etc., etc. Western society in recent decades seems to have evolved a strong language of negativity, which can sometimes be hard to break free from and seem all pervasive in the media. The veneration of film stars and musicians who died young, especially as a result of hedonism, is another aspect of this wide-reaching problem. Live fast, die young is not a phrase that would have occurred to anyone until the last few centuries. Almost everyone lived that way throughout the world. They had no choice. How strange that some people are now ascribing to that philosophy and negating all the gains made by science, medicine, and the Enlightenment. It could also perhaps be said that the current trend of medicalizing increasing areas of human behavior is also somewhat nihilistic. Your child isn't merely badly behaved, they have a medical condition with which you cannot cope. Few people would deny that antidepressants are being wildly overprescribed, leading many to believe that they have a medical condition which only pills and expensive therapy can fix, rather than just a temporary emotional or situational problem. Returning to Nietzsche, his work for me ultimately has the same problem as that of all the existential philosophers and novelists. He outlines in great detail what is wrong or inadequate about human existence, but ultimately fails to propose any solutions. Time and again, existential books end on a thoroughly negative note. they portray a one-sided, bleak view of human experience. It takes work to sift out the useful and positive from the existential canon. There is, however, plenty of good and useful stuff among the pessimism. Here's a few of my favourite quotes, either from existentialists or from a commentator who has extracted some positivity. Kierkegaard: life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards. Nietzsche: the craving for equality can be expressed either by the wish to draw all others down to one's level, by belittling, excluding, tripping them up, or by the wish to draw oneself up with everyone else, by appreciating, helping, taking pleasure in others' success. Colin Wilson spent much of his career pointing out that the failure to see the meaning that surrounds us is what leads to negativity and nihilism. In The Outsider, he wrote, "Freedom posits free will, that is self-evident. But will can only operate when first there is a motive. No motive, no willing. But motive is a matter of belief. You would not want to do anything unless you believed it possible and meaningful. And belief must be belief in the existence of something. That is to say, it concerns what is real. So ultimately, freedom depends upon the real. The outsider's sense of unreality cuts off his freedom at the root." The Outsider was his first book, published in 1956 when he was 24, and the motivation behind him writing the book, the dichotomy of the 19th century romantic novelists, poets, who glimpsed the wonder of life, and so many of them then committed suicide. And he worked out that it was because they saw meaning in these occasional glimpses of true happiness and meaning and purpose, and then everyday life seemed correspondingly dull and pointless and meaningless by comparison, and this leads to despair and what he later came to term defeat proneness. And later in his masterpiece, the, in my opinion, book with the ill-advised title of The Occult, because it's not really about that, here are a few quotes from that, which is just a fantastic and huge book about psychology and defeat proneness and nihilism and overcoming it. And he brings in the work of Gurdjieff and Ouspensky and challenges the existentialist. And it's really the summit of what became his life's work. He died last year at the age of 82, and he published over 100 books, did many lecture tours all over the world, and it is probably the biggest influence on me for doing this podcast. So here's a few short quotes from The Occult before I go on to talk in broader terms about how to use these ideas to overcome nihilism. The main problem with human beings is their tendency to become trapped in the triviality of everydayness, in the suffocating world of their personal preoccupations. And every time they do this, they forget the immense world of broader significance that stretches around them. And since man needs a sense of meaning to release his hidden energies, this forgetfulness pushes him deeper into depression and boredom, the sense that nothing is worth the effort. And later on he says, "Man lives and evolves by eating significance as a child eats food. The deeper his sense of wonder, the wider his curiosity, the stronger his vitality becomes, and the more powerful his grip on his own existence." And a final quote from The Occult, and this very much is his take on the work of Gurdjieff and Ouspensky, and the final line is a paraphrase of Sartre, as I'll talk about afterwards. "When I'm half asleep, my sense of reality is restricted to myself and my immediate surroundings. The more awake I am, the further it stretches. But what we call waking consciousness is not usually a great deal better than sleep. We are still wrapped in a passive, sluggish daydream. But this is not because there is some natural limit to consciousness, but only because we remain unaware that it can be stretched. We are like dogs who think they are on a chain, when in fact they are free." And that last sentence is actually, I'm not 100% sure it was Sartre. It may have been another philosopher, but the original quote is, "Man is free, but everywhere he thinks he is in chains." I'm not even 100% sure that is the exact quote, but you get the point. But Sartre said that, famously, that he never felt so free as being in Paris under German occupation during World War II. And this ties in with what Colin Wilson spent his life writing about, which was that we often need a sense of urgency to get us to see and process and imbibe the meaning that is around us. We all know that you can listen to a piece of music, read a favourite book, look at a sunset or some beautiful countryside or whatever, and if you're in a good mood, you will feel joy and happiness at this external phenomenon or object. If you're in a bad mood, it won't touch you. But the external reality of that, for the sake of argument, piece of music has not changed. The qualities of that piece of music are exactly the same every time you play the album. The objective reality of that piece of music has not changed. You found joy in it when you first heard it, and you found joy in it many times. I can still thoroughly enjoy and really concentrate on albums that I've had for 30-odd years. But if you're in a negative frame of mind to start with, then the music will appear dull and uninteresting to you. And the important point to emphasize about this, and Colin Wilson and the psychologist Abraham Maslow and many people have pointed this out over the years, the point about this is that it is not the external reality which has changed, it is your internal sense of meaning and purpose. It is your negative frame of mind which is distorting this outward thing that would normally give you happiness. And the Romantics, and to a large extent the existentialists, as I talked about earlier, I think are guilty of portraying the negative view of life and existence as the reality, and that people who are happy and have meaning and purpose are kidding themselves, and they're wrong. When, of course, to any sensible thinking person, it's obviously the other way round. Why would we have evolved to be miserable? Serves no purpose. If you believe in God, why would God have designed us to be eternally miserable? Makes no sense. Whether you believe in God or not, it's anti-progress. We're not going to get on in life. We're not going to build new and better civilizations if everyone's miserable. We're going to stagnate or go backwards. Colin Wilson often quotes the example of the novelist Graham Greene, who felt that life was meaningless and so took a revolver and played Russian roulette. And when he pulled the trigger and nothing happened, he felt such a sense of relief that it brought about in him what Abraham Maslow coined the peak experience, which is a phrase that Colin Wilson talks about a lot, which I explain in the book, where you feel a sudden sense of joy and meaning and purpose. And the point is that the point that Colin Wilson makes is that you don't need to risk blowing your head off to get the peak experience. It's all about concentration. Dostoevsky talks about the same thing during the introduction to either The Idiot or Crime and Punishment, I forget which, but he himself was put in front of a firing squad and knew with all certainty that he was 5 minutes away from death. And he decided to spend these last 5 minutes on Earth to concentrate and think about specific things. And obviously, as he wrote about this later, it didn't happen. He was up on some political charge. I forget the exact details. They were let off at the last minute. But for 5 minutes, he was absolutely convinced he was about to die. And the interesting thing psychologically is he said that those 5 minutes seemed to last an eternity. And he had so much time to think about all these things that he wanted to. And afterwards, he thought the same thing that Colin Wilson has talked about thinking in moments of defeat proneness and moments of misery, that, wow, why can't I bring this concentration to bear under normal circumstances where there isn't a sense of urgency or a sense of impending death? Why can't we do this all the time? Because it's merely a matter of concentrating the mind. And Colin Wilson makes the point, I think in The Occult, or in certainly a few of his books, that for human beings, concentration is a natural faculty. Our brains have evolved over 3 million years to concentrate. It's inbuilt into us from the early days when apes first turned into human-like creatures. You know, we've had to develop a faculty of intense concentration to survive, because if you have an early bow and arrow and you don't hit the wild animal with your first shot, instead of you eating it, it's going to eat you. So we've developed this intense concentration, and, you know, designing and building the pyramids 10,000 years ago and all, and the agricultural and then the industrial revolution and modern science and digital technology, it all requires people to have a level of intense concentration. So this is a natural human faculty. But we have developed this negative habit of switching off our concentration, particularly during the last 100 years or so, with cinema and television and now the proliferation of digital media, that everybody's constantly watching YouTube videos of cats falling off pianos on their iPhones instead of having human conversation and contact. And so we've learned to switch, and some people's lives are entirely about switching off and not concentrating, about having bland, pacifying sort of bread and circuses style sensory input as a complete 100% substitute for concentrating on what's actually out there in the real world. But the point is, you don't need this sense of urgency to combat this negativity, this nihilism. You just need to concentrate and bring your powers of will, your free will, your conscious mind. You just need to concentrate until you feel and see and hear and appreciate and taste, if you like, the meaning that surrounds you. And when I said in the book, life is neither meaningful nor meaningless, it just is, I'd like to kind of expand on that point now. I was meaning that in the sort of sense of there being a purpose or a pre-assigned script. I don't believe that, but as this is positive thinking and the meaning of life, we're obviously going to keep talking a lot about meaning. So meaning doesn't have to, it's not just, it's a kind of nebulous word. It's not just in the grand sense of, oh, the meaning of the universe. It's, oh, I'm listening to this piece of music. It makes me feel happy. Therefore, it is meaningful to me. I am projecting meaning onto it. And that is what we do when we are in a positive frame of mind, when we are concentrating, when we have our natural cognitive faculties working well, which is our normal, as I say, state of consciousness. We project meaning, we ascribe meaning onto just about everything we see. When we get into this dull state of consciousness and we develop this existential boredom, this what Sartre called nausea, this sense of unreality that Colin Wilson described in The Outsiders and that Camus did in his novel L'Étranger, which is variously translated as either The Stranger or The Outsider. It's the same thing with Meursault in that novel. Nothing is real to him, and he ends up being condemned to death, and it still really doesn't bother him because life is unreal, so who cares if you die? And that's the very dangerous notion that I was talking about earlier with the negativity and nihilism of the existentialist, and even going back to Schopenhauer and Kierkegaard, and maybe even before that, there have been a lot of negativity in philosophy. The idea that only one, you know, Socrates' idea that the unexamined life is not worth living, that only, and Plato thinking that people like him were the natural heirs to power in society, and that only the ideal society would be run by philosophers and intellectuals. And that if you're not like him, then, you know, life is kind of meaningless for everybody else. This is clearly an absurd viewpoint. So, although meaning is individual and subjective, there are things in the external world in which we are capable of finding meaning if our brains are in their natural state. Therefore, the world around us and human existence and life as we know it can never be meaningless. Well, there you are, folks. That's the end of episode 6 of Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life. Hope you've enjoyed it. I certainly enjoyed doing it. Much of that was improvised, and I'd forgotten about some of that, and I'm pretty pleased with this episode, so hope you'll enjoy it. This podcast and the website is really starting to take off now. I'm getting a lot more unique visitors to my website, marcusfreestone.com. That's where you can find the podcast if you've got this off iTunes or Stitcher or whatever. Please go to the website. There's a separate page for the podcast, and I've also added a new page of quotes and links, quotes about psychology, philosophy, everything related to positive thinking and the meaning of life from people like Colin Wilson, Gurdjieff and Ouspensky, Nietzsche, all sorts of people. And I'm going to greatly expand that over the next few months. I'd like to give out the usual exhortation. If you've enjoyed this free podcast, then and you'd like to support me in continuing to do some more, it does take a lot of my brain space and effort and work, then please go to marcusfreestone.com and consider buying one of my ebooks for 99 cents or one of my albums. I've got about 30 albums and EPs ranging through metal, rock, jazz, blues, electronica, ambient. You can get some EPs from about $2 or something, and the albums go up to $5 or $6. So, yeah, if you could purchase some of my work, then that would keep me going a bit longer and, you know, buy me some, buy me some tea, buy me some tea bags and Pringles, because, you know, that's what writers exist on, or at least this one anyway. So, yeah, if you could do that, and if not, then please like or give this a rating on iTunes. Go to my Facebook page, Marcus Freestone, writer and musician. Rave about or slag off if you're an unpleasant person and you want a future episode telling you why you're wrong. Yeah, go to Facebook or wherever you can find me via my websites. I'm all over the place, not just mentally. I mean, I'm all over the internet. I'm a bit all over the place as well. It's a bit late at night as I'm doing the outro to this, so I think I'll just stop now. Keep being positive, keep seeking the meaning. I'll see you next week. Bye.